It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Gina Trapani is here. Yes, the changelog is back. Aaron Newcomb as well. We'll talk about Heartbleed, what you should do about this horrible internet disaster, and whether you need an antivirus on Android. Turns out the answer is not what you expect. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 244, recorded April 9th, 2014. Bikini-rich content. This Week in Google is brought to you by NatureBox, where you can get great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like Cherry Berry Bonanza. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use offer code TWIG to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for TWIG This Week in Google, the show where we cover Google, the cloud, the Googleverse, the Twitterverse, the Facebookverse, the blankverse. Gina Trapani's back. We missed you, Gina.
Yeah, so great to be back. Hello.
ThinkUp.com, now in her new Brooklyn office. No more paneling. I'm sad.
I've graduated from mom's basement.
Did you bring the Jets blanket?
The Jets blanket stayed at mom's, unfortunately.
Oh.
But I'm like a grown-up now. It's really exciting. My own four walls. It's amazing.
How nice.
Great to be here.
We missed you so much, but we're glad you're here. I'm going to ask you about your phone in a second. Aaron Newcomb is also here.
Yeah,
glad to NetApp, be here. And also a regular on many of our shows.
Right.
You did Floss.
Floss
this
Weekly
morning.
This morning. Yeah, we talked to the guys from, was it MIFO? It's the guy that do the micropayments.
Oh, neat.
MIFOS, I think it is. MIFOS.
Uh-huh.
And they do micropayments. And they're
open
really
source micropayments.
Open source micropayments. And it's
were they
really
using
cool
Heartbleed?
Application. I did. We get into that a little bit. We kind of just laughed about it, and we didn't actually go into the details because I didn't want to derail the show on
Well,
Heartbleed.
And you can listen to Security Now yesterday.
Yeah, that was great.
Obviously went into deep details of that. Heartbleed is, you know, it's ironic because this was the week XP, yesterday XP came to its end of life, mm-hmm. and we thought XP apocalypse would happen, and all the people, almost half a billion who are continue to run XP no longer are getting updates. That means that the hackers who have exploits are... Nothing's happened yet, but I think we've not heard the end of it.
Right.
Nevertheless, the big security story of the week has nothing to do with XP. It has to do with open source. It turns out there's been a highly exploitable flaw in the open SSL library that's used by 2/3 of all web servers out there right now. Anybody who uses Apache or Nginx mm-hmm. is likely, right, using OpenSSL?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, we just interviewed the Nginx guys about a month ago on Floss Weekly. They came in and gave us an overview, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, I feel so bad for them because they have such a great product. But it's not their fault, but it's, you know, pretty much anything that uses OpenSSL is at risk. And so,
and the thing is, what they're at risk for is so significant
mm-hmm.
because basically it allows a leak of data from the server itself.
Right.
And it leaves no trace.
Right.
And we know that this hole has existed for 2 years.
Yeah. Yep.
So that means for the last 2 years, any bad guy who knew of this hole could extract data from a server 64 bytes at a time.
From memory.
So that means now he can't say, I want to get Aaron Newcomb's credentials. He just gets whatever he gets.
He gets whatever he gets. But then you take all that data and you parse through it and you're like, this is after the decryption algorithms have run on things like your passwords and sensitive information that is going back and forth from the server. So you know, after that decryption has gone through, then it gets loaded into memory and you've got all this data just basically sitting there open for someone to come in and pull out and digest.
Now, since it's from memory, so we were having a discussion on Windows Weekly, and I will ask Steve, but he's not around right now. And by the way, Google was bit by this. There is a Google, Twitter, Google, Yahoo, pretty much everybody who uses the LAMP stack was bit, right? So presumably they've all patched it. Google's patched most. Yahoo's patched most. Not all.
It takes time to patch that many servers.
Because there is a fix, but you have to make sure that library is being used by your servers everywhere.
Yep.
You said something interesting. So it reads what's in RAM, not what's in the database.
Right.
So that's important because it's decrypted, but it also means that, and somebody was asking, well, what about two-factor authentication? Has that been compromised? And if it were reading, so in order for two-factor to work, you and Google share a key, a secret number.
Right.
And locally on your phone, it's hashing that secret number with the time to get a six-digit code. Google hashes the time with the same secret number, knows what that code should be. You're both at the same, you know, your times are synchronized. And so that number should match. If they match, then Google says, yes, you're you. So that is a secret number that Google knows. Mm-hmm. Is that stored in RAM during that handshake? We don't know.
Well, we don't know. And it quite possibly, whatever you type into the keyboard and press enter when you type in that number, that's going to be in memory.
But that's only good for 30
seconds.
That's
only good for, exactly.
It's the secret number that we have to know. Right. Is that being leaked?
So I would say no, but I'm not the expert. I would defer to Steve Gibson on this. But I would say no, because they should be taking that key, that hash, and then using that along with something else. Like you said, time, or, you know, your mother's maiden name, or the number of digits in pi up to a certain point, and that point is random.
But there has to be, it's symmetric in the sense there has to be a shared number.
Yeah.
And a shared key. And that shared key, if that's leaked by Heartbleed, then you're screwed. Then two-factor's not going to even protect you.
Well, if you know the key and you know what the algorithm is for generating the number.
Well, so everybody uses Google Authenticator. We know what the algorithm is, right? Well, we know what it is for Google anyway, and Outlook and Evernote. And Twitter doesn't. Twitter has its own. What the ones that are sent to you by text message, that's probably okay.
Should be okay. Absolutely.
Because that's a mystery.
Right, right.
So it's nasty.
Unless you happen to be logging in at the exact same time from the exact same computer.
Then they'll have that six digit. Know,
right, but that's very unlikely.
Or whatever digit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Schneier's piece on this was really kind of pulled me up on my bootstraps. Of course, we had to patch our servers at ThinkUp. We're a new company, and we were actually running a version of SSL, OpenSSL, on our front-end servers, which was not affected. So not every version of OpenSSL was affected, but our back-end servers were, so we had to patch. But Schneier's piece on this, which was that this vulnerability has existed for 2 years, you know, you leave no trace, the attacker leaves no trace, just assume that everything has been compromised.
He says on a scale of 1 to 10, this is an 11.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree.
And what Tumblr said on their site is take tomorrow off work and go through all your sites. You don't only have to worry about ones using SSL, but go through all your sites and change the password. But there is an additional piece of information you should know. There's no point in changing the password until they've fixed the flaw.
Right.
Because it'll just be leaked again.
Exactly.
So what you should do is wait until a site announces, as Google has, okay, we fixed the flaw, and today is the day you should change your Google password. What unfortunately is not happening, I keep going to Bank of America. They're not saying anything. No bank wants to talk about this.
Right.
They'll just raise more concern than they can solve. And, you know, people will go, what happened? My heart is bleeding. What should I do? and that's a problem because I don't know if my bank has fixed this.
Yeah. I haven't logged into my bank since I heard about this. I said, oh, now it doesn't matter, right? Because it's been going on for the past 2 years. If someone's got this, they probably got it now. But what does matter, what was kind of a big deal about this was that, you know, people started talking about this before the fix was ready. So there was generating a lot of anxiety about this. And I know that there was some pushback against some media outlets and things talking about this, saying, you know, why was this such a big deal before we had the fix put out?
Now there are Heartbleed tests online that you can use to test it. The OpenSSL test suite has been updated to test for that. Chat room, what's the link for that? Because
Yeah, it's like SSL.
LastPass has one up. LastPass.com/heartbleed.
That's it. I think that's it.
Yeah, and I would trust LastPass. By the way, they fixed theirs very quickly, but that doesn't mean, that merely means you can use LastPass to fix your passwords.
Right.
But you can't. So the SSL server test does now have, this is from Qualys, have, so you can say, okay, well, bankofamerica.com, have they fixed it? And it will actually have a Heartbleed. So it is not vulnerable, according to this, to the Heartbleed attack. So
I assume that these checkers are just examining the headers of the website request to see whether or not the particular version of OpenSSL is being used. But, you know, those headers are very easily, you know, unset or rehidden. Like at ThinkUp, you know, we changed our headers so you couldn't detect exactly what versions we were using for security purposes, security through obscurity, that is. So these checkers, unless they're doing something different, Aaron, correct me if they are, they're, you know, they'll tell you if they know for sure this site is running this this vulnerable version of OpenSSL, but they can't tell you for sure for everybody.
Yahoo.com was tested as vulnerable according to this gist. Detected server software of ATS. Server software is unknown. Vulnerable. They don't know.
They don't know, right. So Yahoo is renamed, has said they deliver in their headers, which is totally configurable in Apache and Nginx. You know, what software is this web server using? You can change that name to anything in your config files. Ours says, you know, ThinkUp web server, right? And that's like I said, security through obscurity. But for these kind of checkers that are just looking at the headers, they just don't know. They don't know what version of OpenSSL is.
So this isn't, even though Qualys is saying, oh yeah, Yahoo.com is not vulnerable to Heartbleed, this isn't conclusive.
Right.
Yeah, or is it?
Yeah, it's not definitive anyway.
It's not definitive, right. Yeah.
That's not so good. That's not so good because bank is never, ever, ever going to say, oh, we fixed our servers. So maybe I'll wait till they say you should change your password now. They're never going to send that out either.
Well, you know, I just tried to log into Tumblr earlier today and I got the message, you know, we detected unusual activity on your account. Please change your password. And I assumed that this was Heartbleed, you know, related. In fact, we had a Tumblr engineer on All About Android last night on the Android team. So I went and changed my password. So will your banks do that? I hope so. I mean, I expect that anytime my bank suspects that something has gone wrong with my account, they'd ask me to update my credentials. Yeah. To tell you the truth, I think the reality is that these bugs are always going to happen. I think that the real test of an app or a company's mettle is how quickly they acknowledge that they were affected and that they fix it and they lay out a clear plan for users to sort of recoup their information.
Be honest. Mm-hmm. The banks are not known for being that. There's one other thing now, and we talked about this on Security Now, and I don't know if this is necessary or not, but Steve said do it. So I'm going to show you this too. If you're using Chrome, you're going to go to your settings, show advanced settings, which is at the very bottom, and you'll see SSL certificates right at the very bottom. One thing that most browsers do not currently do is check for server certificate revocation. So this is important because part of the fix is to get a new certificate issued. Mm-hmm. You can presume, mm-hmm. Google presumes the certificate has been compromised. We don't know, by the way.
Right.
We don't know, but they're going to presume it's been compromised. Now, what you don't want to do is continue to use the broken certificate because that could allow a man in the middle. If it has been compromised, that could allow a man in the middle. So what you want to do is check the box that says check for server certificate revocation. That means Chrome will say, will go to there's two different databases and say, is this certificate revoked? And if you're getting a bad certificate, the browser will say, whoa, not supposed to do that. That's a revoked certificate. It's not on by default because Steve says there's some overhead,
right,
to check these two databases so it can slow it down. So by default, it doesn't do that. Turn it on, at least for now.
I'm turning it on right now. That's a great tip. Thank you, Steve.
You can do it in Firefox. Safari, if you're a Mac user, is a little more complicated. You actually have to go into keychain access into the certificate section. I might as well do it since I think we probably have a few Macintosh users watching. Your Chromebook is sufficient just to do it in Chrome. You have to go into certificates and keychain access. Go to in the preferences, and then This is the online. These are the two different databases it searches: OSESP and CRL. These are certificate revocation servers. The default is best attempt. What you want to do is hold down your option key and select require for all certificates. It's not. You can't even get to that without holding down the option key, because I guess they just don't want you to slow down. I don't know. But basically, from now on, it will go and check those two databases, OCSP and CRL, for revocation before it accepts a certificate. And I don't know. You know, it should be probably in this day and age a default behavior, but I guess it slows things down.
I just got an email from IFTTT saying there was a major vulnerability. IFTTT is no longer vulnerable.
Good for them.
No evidence of malicious behavior, but we've logged you out of IFTTT across all our apps, and we encourage you to change your password. That's a really good way, yep. I think, to handle this.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm. But that means everybody watching has got to go through all of their HTTPS site passwords and change them.
Yeah, and I've standardized on, like, I use, I think I'm going to switch to LastPass, but I use Password Maker right now because it's free and it works pretty much everywhere. But, you know, now all those passwords that I felt so safe and secure about because they were all scrambled and run through an algorithm and mixed up and I didn't have to remember what they all actually were, now I have to figure out a different way to go through and change all those passwords. It's easy to do, but it's just kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah, if you're not using a password keeper, sheesh.
Yeah.
But this is this is an opportunity to start using LastPass. We know LastPass is secure. Start using LastPass, set it up, and now go through every site.
Exactly.
And LastPass will remember it. Ask that it generate a password. Say, I want a new password. Generate it.
Yep.
LastPass will remember it. You're now clean.
That's exactly what I'm going to do, especially since they now have the integration with Android. For Chrome and some other apps.
Isn't that nice?
That's awesome.
By the way, it completely broke. what was it? It completely broke something. The camera on the M8.
Oh, really?
Did it?
Yeah. So, and it was one of those things nobody knew about. I'm sure LastPass has fixed it. But if you get weird crashes, so the camera kept crashing. And what I think I was searching on the web and finally figured out is that the camera, that LastPass was trying to pop up this thing. Right. So you have to go into the LastPass. They have settings for every app and say don't. And then the camera works fine.
Wow.
It's a weird fix, and I'm glad I found it because I actually thought I had a bad M8.
Hmm. So there was no indication?
No, because, you know, this is what happens.
It just kept crashing.
New phone, new software feature. Right. So no one had a chance to test it.
Yeah.
And being one of the, that's always the drawback to being the owner of a new product.
Yeah. The canary in the coal mine.
Yeah. I am. Exactly. And I passed out and fell a long way. So it's a good thing to know. I guess I'll pass that along if you get weirdness. But I do love it because LastPass, when it sees a password entry form, will pop up and say, do you want me to fill that out? I happen to know that. Yep. Or not.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good stuff. All right, we'll take a break, come back. We've got lots to talk about. In fact, I want to ask Gina, I hear you got your M8.
I did. I did.
You pushed by. And you and I have a different versions because you have the Google Play Edition. And I'm curious.
I got the Play
that.
Edition. Yeah, we should talk about it.
You guys last night played with the Galaxy S5 as well. I'd love to get that impression. Although,
yes.
I hear you were kind of negative.
You know, you know, I'm a sucker for design, which is why I have the M8, right?
I completely agree with you.
And I didn't love the looks of the S5.
It looks just like the S4.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was going to review it this week, but I felt so bad for Jason. I said, please, you have this. So he's got it for a week. He'll review it.
We have the unboxing.
Yeah, and you unboxed. Well, I unboxed it first, but you had it.
Oh, whoa.
I did, but.
We had a re-unbox.
Yeah, but. I guess we were embargoed, so we couldn't do it till midnight. It was very complicated.
Right. Yes, it was a little bit complicated.
You were the first to do it.
Jason had a late night last night.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by NatureBox. You want a snack? It'll make you feel better. Jason, have a snack. You know, look, we got another NatureBox. So they have three sizes. I think this is the small size. The whole idea is, come around this time of day, in the early afternoon, lunch is long gone, a distant memory, and dinner is too far off to be forgotten, but maybe you've just got a little hankering for something. Wouldn't you love a, Nature Box? How about a cherry berry bonanza? That looks pretty good. These are all nutritionist approved. The thing I love about Nature Box is these are healthy snacks. Snacks you can eat and not feel guilty about. This has, what does it have in it? It's cranberries, tart cherries, blueberries. That's it.
Oh, my God. I'm ordering one of these.
Ooh,
for my
that sounds That's good.
It. That's it. After hearing about it last night and tonight. Yeah, forget it. Still ordering.
So here's the cool thing. By the way, you should get it for Think Up. So there are never any high fructose corn syrup or trans fats in these things. They are always, all natural ingredients. They're just delicious. You can, if you wish, narrow it down at naturebox.com/twit and say, I want vegan or soy-free, I'm gluten-conscious, or I don't want any lactose, I'm nut-free, non-GMO, all of that stuff. You can also choose by taste, savory, sweet, or spicy. Or you can just say, come on, hit me with a random selection, like barbecue kernel kettle kernels, French toast granola, chili lime pistachios, cherry berry bonanza. They'll put a box together. Here's smoky barbecue peas. Which one does this suits you, Aaron? You could pick one.
Ooh, I'll take the barbecue peas, please.
See, Aaron brought us donuts this morning. Oh, no. I would love to have chipotle maple almonds. Come on.
Those are good, too.
Sweet, savory.
I can eat either of those, actually.
You can have anything you want because you know what? There's more where that came from. I get a Nature Box every month. You can get a 3, 6, or 12-month subscription. And if you go to naturebox.com/twit, 50% off your first box. Naturebox.com/twit. You're open. Just try the cherry. He's trying the chipotle maple almonds.
This is the chipotle maple almonds.
So you know almonds are good for you. Mm. They're great in antioxidants. No high fructose corn syrup. No partially hydrogenated oils. Zero trans fats. No artificial sweeteners, flavors, or colors.
Those are good.
A little sweet. Yeah. A little hot.
Not too spicy.
A little sweet, a little heat.
It's just a little smidgen of a taste.
You guys are killing me here.
And they sound good, too.
Wow, is that good?
Yeah, really good.
Healthy crunch.
We give these guys always way too much ad time because we keep eating their stuff while they're...
yummy.
A half-hour ad as we eat. All right, moving along. Thank you, Nature Box.
Snack time's over.
Nap time's coming up.
That's right.
That's what I look forward to. How do you like it? M8. You had the original HTC One, as did I.
Yes, daughter threw it on the floor a few too many times, and it died. Yeah. It died on me.
These things happen.
Died dead. These things happen. So I ordered the M8 from the Google Play Store. I got it day before yesterday. Of course, the HTC One has a micro SIM, and this has a nano SIM. So I had to go down to the T-Mobile store
get
a new SIM where the T-Mobile people nearly passed out. They're like, where'd you get this phone? This doesn't come out till Friday. It's like, just ordered it on the web. No big deal. So they transferred my number over. And, you know, I like it a lot. It's big. It's bigger than the regular HTC One. And it's got these kind of curved, softer edges with this lip, which the regular or the original HTC One didn't have, which I don't like as much. The two things I really do like, I like that the buttons are now on screen rather than on the device itself.
Yes.
And
That bugged the heck out of me.
I like that a lot. That's closer kind of to the Google Android experience. Yeah. Now, this is the Google Play Edition, which means that I'm running kind of the Google Android experience. But the one thing that this phone has different is these dual cameras.
Right.
So they actually forked. They did ship this Google Play Edition with the HTC Photo Edit.
Oh, good.
Which can do the focus magic.
That's the most important part of Sense 6 you want. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. And so I played around with that a little bit. I took a few shots of my daughter, who's always moving. I always seem to get the background focused and her blurred. And so I tried changing the focus, and it's okay. It's not super good. Like, I noticed kind of like around her head, you could tell that it's, you know, not perfectly aligned. You could tell that there's a seam. It felt like a filter. I thought that it would feel less like a filter. I thought that it would feel less like, you know, an Instagram filter and more like a genuine, this thing in the front is going out of focus. And there's that 3D where you can tilt and see the three kind of 3D objects.
That's just weird.
which also seemed kind of gimmicky to me. So unfortunately, the dual camera stuff did seem more gimmicky than I would have liked.
Let me show you. These are pictures I took in our studio of Chad. This is the normal one. This is with a background decolored, desaturated.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
That is nice.
And this is another, these are special effects they do in the backgrounds. Yeah, I won't forget that. Okay, now this is the, so this is faded background.
All right, there you go. So notice kind of around on the edges, like around his hair, around his head. Like it's not quite perfect.
But it's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good, but it's not as good as if you took that with a real DSLR and had that real depth of field. You know, it feels.
But I mean.
But it's good enough for online.
So look at here's Greg. Look at Greg's arm on the left there. When I take it out of focus, the arm's out. But if you think about it, the depth of field is very shallow, right? So his arm would be out of focus.
Yeah, it should be.
I don't hate it. I agree with you. Now, what is good about this is the macro camera is excellent. So the close-up pictures are quite good. I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking this is a pretty darn good. It's 4 megapixels, but, you know, one trick, and you could do this, I think, if you have the Sense camera, there's a setting for maximum ISO. One of the things this camera does in low light is turns the ISO way too high. It gets very grainy. Mm. I set it down to 400. It won't go above 400 now, which means you're not going to get as low light won't be as good as maybe it used to be.
And that makes sense that the default settings were set that way, right? Because that was supposed to be one of the sweet spots.
It's a selling point.
Yeah. They want that aspect of the camera to work really well because that's the one place, since they only have 4 megapixels, they can claim really good low light pictures, right?
Well, but some of these are low. This is a low light picture. And you see there's a lot of grain. This is before I set it down to 400.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just find that a little displeasing with all that grain. Yeah, so I just, I grin and bear it.
Yeah, so this didn't actually ship, but the Play Edition doesn't ship with the HTC camera, but it does have the HTC Edit. I'm sorry, my video's getting bad.
Yeah,
it does have the HTC Edit features. So when you tap the Edit button, when you're looking through gallery, it lets you use the HTC Edit. And those aren't available for photos that you take while you're taking video, which I do a lot. Like I'll take video of my daughter and then just tap the screen to grab a still. And so it doesn't seem to be using the dual cameras there, so you can't do the focus and the 3D thing.
Oh, that's too bad.
But
there's nothing else, though.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else in Sense you would be missing. I don't think there's anything else that you really, you got Zoe. In fact, there's a Zoe app on here. It says coming soon. I think they're going to offer the Zoe capability to all cameras.
Wow.
It's going to be in the Play Store.
That would be great.
So that would be great.
That would be really great.
Here's another example. If you look at the straw hat in the middle, and then I defocus the background. Apparently the brim of the hat is also that's a little disconcerting, and the guy's shoulder on the far right gets blurred. That so it doesn't work. You're right. It's not perfect.
Yeah, it feels like a filter.
It's a filter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at his shoulder. There's no reason.
Right.
That should.
My impression was that these were two different images, one with different focuses, and that you were switching between them, but it's actually much more of a software effect that's getting applied after.
I think it's computational.
Yeah, that's interesting. You can clearly see the region select there.
Yeah, it's computational.
Yeah.
And then maybe the stripes in the shirt confused it. I would bet that that's what happened.
Combined with the shadow, probably.
Yeah.
So, like, did they really need to build a whole other camera in the back of this phone in order to do this? I don't know. Like, these seem like effects that they could have achieved with just one really good camera.
Well, in fact, the Nokia does. So that the Nokia camera app, which has a single sensor, does it, in fact, arguably, better.
Mm.
So, yeah, I would say so. I do like this phone, though. You've got to like the build. It is heavier and bigger than your old one, right? Oh, we lost her. She was just slowly degrading.
Sorry about that. Yeah. My video is degrading. Hopefully
you're fine.
Be better.
You're better, yeah.
Okay, good. As long as my audio is good. I love the phone. Just to be clear, I really do love it. It's beautiful. It does push my personal limit of size. I wouldn't want a phone bigger than this. It does feel big. But the build is gorgeous. I'm really restraining myself from buying that really cool case with the dots.
No, don't buy that. That's dumb.
Yeah.
You like the dot case?
I like the dot case.
Oh, yeah. Get the dot case. By all means, be go knock yourself out. Why are you trying to restrain yourself then if you like the dot case?
Well, Well, because I risked some, you know, domestic discord around this particular financial decision. So I don't know if I can.
Oh, come on. The doc. How much is the doc case?
That's like 100
well,
bucks.
Well, that's true. I guess once you sink 700 bucks in, you're
honey,
deep in.
You have to have the doc case.
It's only been 3 days, but the battery life so far has been great. I forgot to plug this in last night, and I'm at about 50% right now. Which
I've
is,
been getting
I'm at 51%.
15 hours pretty consistent.
That's great.
Yeah, which is another thing I really needed, and the HTC One was kind of killing me on. So yeah. I'm very pleased about that.
That may not
pleased.
Stay that way. Remember, that's
yeah,
just
that will most likely
brand
not
new
stay
phone
that way.
Factor.
And it may be better for Gina than it is for you, Leo, because Gina's running Google stock Google.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Hers,
well, it's so also very user specific. I mean, how you use
and
the
how
phone.
You use it. Absolutely.
Yeah, what you're
how much
the
do you use the display?
Definitely.
And
right.
Yep. Yep.
Definitely. I had gone really far and installed a bunch of apps, particularly for AAA. And so I've done a clean sweep and just tried to, you know, remove as many background processes as possible.
Yeah.
Do either of you use a screen protector?
No.
Nope.
No. No. Because the curved edges to that phone are going to make screen protectors look a little goofy because they won't cling to the edges. So you have to get one that's cut down. And then when it's cut down, it looks like you're not really protecting the whole screen.
So, I mean the bezel? The bezel?
Yeah, the bezel on the edges. That was the
beveled.
Problem. One of the bevel. That was one of the problems with the Nexus 4. I got Nexus 4s for my wife and my son for Christmas, and I went to put a screen protector on them because they need them. I'm like, why isn't this fitting right? And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot the corners are beveled. The edges, so.
Nothing's perfect in this world, alas.
But it feels good in your hand, so that's.
So, what did you guys? I guess you weren't here. You were, of course, on Skype, Gina. So you didn't get to actually hold the Galaxy S5. What was the consensus on that last night on All About Android?
We were really just kind of checking out the hardware part of it. We're checking out the dimpled back and that metallic kind of edge
back
that went
is
around.
Silly.
Yeah, that was our consensus. You know, we've been told that we're really hard on the Samsung devices. I don't think any of us are really huge fans of the Samsung builds. And we were talking about how the buttons were reversed as usual, and how that the camera kind of protrudes a little bit.
It's so funny that talk about a 180 degree turn for me. I used to want a physical home button. Now I don't.
Yeah,
I have now completely gone over to the Google idea of having soft buttons at the bottom of the screen. Remember, I hated that idea.
Yeah,
and you admit that's that there is wasted space. There is from here to here wasted by the buttons and by the HTC logo that maybe could be better used. However, I just think that's so much better than this wonky home button, just the click and all that stuff. There's the Band-Aid.
Yeah,
back.
It's a little cheap, right? Yeah.
It's supposed to feel more
Samsung
natural.
Samsung
right?
fans are gonna love it.
Are they?
I mean, I
feel like this is a cultural gulf. Like, this is, seriously.
I agree.
That this is just, some people will like it. It just feels cheesy to me. I really don't like TouchWiz. They've improved it in the sense that there is more free space on here. There's a lot of the Samsung apps are optional, which is a big improvement. But AT&T, this is an AT&T phone. Still, you know, 10 AT&T apps? Come on. You know, you don't get any of that stuff on Google Play, do you?
No. That's why I put Google Edition on my S4.
Right.
I get rid of all that crap.
Right. And so here's all the Samsung apps. And the nice thing is I can uninstall them when I don't have to install them. So they've got more than 10 gigs free on the 16-gig phone, which that's a big improvement.
Yep.
Camera on this is significant improvement, 13 megapixels. And and it's using Beauty Face right now. And look how beautiful I look.
Look how beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Leo, we were very happy. We had some good Leo pictures on the phone.
Oh, yeah. I left some pictures on there. Yeah. That is beauty face. Man, that's gorgeous.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, my mic's on.
I heard that, Chad.
What?
What?
Beauty face. I mean, that face. Describes the whole camera.
They got rid of the golf mode. I can't understand why.
Oh, what are you going to do?
Yeah, isn't that terrible? So they do have auto beauty face Schottenmore. I don't know what Schottenmore is.
It's golf mode.
Oh, it's back, but it's just in a one. Browse the various effects available for burst shots. I see. So now I can hold the device steady till it takes the picture.
I'm
Now I have all these best face, best photo stuff. It doesn't look any better to me. Let's see. Anyway, I don't know how to get out of this now. I'm stuck. There we go. What other modes? You got dual camera. I still think that's silly, but the M8 has that as well. What's download? Why is that a mode? Download mode? Oh, I can get more. Animated photo, shot and sound. Again, this is how they save a little space. You know what? I think that's a good response, Samsung.
I think it is, too.
Yeah. Not everybody's going to want golf mode, but if they do, I guess you can get it again.
Right.
It's a fast 13-megapixel camera. I actually think that the camera on the M8 is more pleasing. I think you made the right choice, Gina.
I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. Is there an N6 imminent?
I mean, there's always the next thing, right? Think I.O. is going to... I think I.O. is going to yield a watch. I don't know that it's going to be a phone this year, but it might be both.
Right.
And who knows about a tablet?
One other thing, and I bet you can I bet you can do this. The Fitbit app works with this phone. I don't know if they mentioned with the M8. You know, there's a Samsung Health app. Mm-hmm. But the Fitbit app works with the accelerometer in this phone. So the same thing that the S Health does on the Galaxy will work on the M8. But you have to download the Fitbit app, and you can see your steps and distance. This is me for today. And, so that's nice. Other apps besides Fitbit apparently will work. I'm 5,622 steps today. And only 5,000 more to go. So you like it? You're happy?
I am. I'm pretty happy about it. So now there's the Fitbit app. You still have to sync with the Fitbit dongle, right? You're not syncing directly to your phone.
No.
Or the phone is calculating your
steps. The phone is the dongle. You no longer need the bracelet. The phone's an accelerometer. Right, you just have to carry it with you wherever you go and jiggle.
Yeah, because of the syncing. I always have the dongle plugged in and some other computer, and I never do the syncing.
Silly.
I'm gonna get my video fixed.
Yeah, download Fitbit while you're doing that.
Yeah, I will do that.
So interesting. I was listening this morning to TNT. Of course, Comcast is testifying now in front of Congress why it should be allowed to merge with Time Warner. And considering they pretty much bought and own Congress, I don't think this is going to be a difficult thing. They seem very confident. Meanwhile, Google is saying, well, we should get in the mobile phone business. Comcast announced it wants to do a Wi-Fi ISP. Google is also getting close to competing with wireless carriers.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they're considering offering in areas where they offer Google Fiber wireless service. Maybe that Google Play phone then would really start to sing.
Yep.
Remember they were in the bidding for the 700 megahertz spectrum released by the television stations a few years ago. They bid like Pi, and what else did they bid? They bid some like mathematical bids.
Right.
Because they weren't serious. They just were trying to get the FCC to make rules about the spectrum for whoever bought it, that it would be open. Verizon ended up getting it, and Verizon is theoretically hobbled by net neutrality agreements it made by when it bought that. But, of course, they ignored them. And the FCC has no will to enforce it, so it doesn't really matter.
It's really a disappointment. I mean, when that spectrum came up, everyone was like, oh, this is great. It'll go through walls.
It'll be low really frequency. Nice. It's what
low
you want.
Frequency. You'll be able to do all sorts of stuff with it, and then nothing has happened with it.
People have talked about getting Google in the wireless business since 2006.
Yeah.
And I wish they would do it. So maybe it has to do with the idea of putting Wi-Fi everywhere. It's Wi-Fi is in all 7,000 Starbucks stores is from Google. Apparently, this summer it's going to offer other store owners around the country. Wi-Fi, but so is Comcast. See, they're in a race, right?
Yeah, yep.
Right, but that's their goal, is to get everybody online.
Right. Yeah, because they make money when people are online.
Mm-hmm.
That's information from The Information, Jessica Lessen's new news site. Google. I was so surprised. I saw Google stock went down, and then I realized, it went down because they split the stock. which confused the hell out of people.
Yeah, it did me. I was like, what? What happened? What's the news? You know, I'm like frantically getting online.
Google stock $500. Yeah. Oh, they split it.
Yeah, it was a split.
Okay. That's good.
That is good.
And I don't know why it confuses investors, but so it's $564, but because that's half the price, it's the equivalent of like $1,200 something.
Right. Right.
The stock has rebounded. In fact, it's doing quite well. It's up $9 today. We don't really cover stock news, but I just... Yeah.
But it's good for them, though, because, I mean, when the stock price gets too high, people shy away from buying it.
Right.
So I'm surprised they didn't do it sooner. I mean, the stock's been going up and up and up, and they've got to have been... You know, they had to have been feeling the pinch from people just saying, eh, I don't know if I want to buy a stock that high. It seems like it's hit its peak, right?
I wish we had somebody who's, you know, in on all of this stuff, understands this finance stuff, because in addition to splitting the stock, they put 330 million new shares... of Google into play, but these are non-voting C shares. So they're a little less than the A shares. That's what you're buying on the stock market, a few bucks less. But the reason you want these C shares, these non-voting shares, is so you can give them to employees without diluting the voting stake of the founders, mm-hmm. Page and Brin.
Mm-hmm.
Larry Page and Sergey own 56% of the vote through those B shares. Those are not traded publicly. And each B share is 10 votes. Eric Schmidt has 8.2% of the B shares. So
this offers more value to employees, but guarantees control by the founders.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is not
Sergey
unusual.
And Larry can, if they agree...
Right.
If their votes go a particular way, override everyone else's.
That's right, because they get 10 votes per share.
Right, and they've got 56%.
And
right?
then the C-class stocks, so complicated. I don't understand all this stuff. Mm. Anyway, if you do, thank you. Good luck to you. You're a better man than I am. But it makes sense, right? So they did the split, but they also created this new class of non-voting shares, put a bunch of them into the market, but also they're going to keep a bunch so that they can reward employees without diluting their power. Makes sense.
Yep.
Yep.
If Jeff were here, he'd probably do 22 as a number. That's how long it took the Project Loon balloon to circle the Earth.
Mm.
Apparently, that's a record.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really fast for a
balloon. Yeah.
For a balloon, for a thing that just looks like, you know, I don't know, somebody's sheets flew off into the sky.
Or a jellyfish or something, yeah.
A jellyfish, yeah.
So I guess the plan was 33-day revolutions, but they must have gotten some good winds. 20. It enjoyed a few loop-de-loops over the Pacific Ocean before heading east on the winds towards Chile and Argentina. Then made its way back around near Australia and New Zealand. This is from the Google Plus Project Loon account. Along the way, it caught a ride on the Roaring Forties. That's the strong west-to-east winds in the southern hemisphere that act like an autobahn in the sky, where our balloons can quickly zoom over oceans to get... Oh, see, that's the problem. You're sitting up there, you're in the... They're in, like, the stratosphere or higher, and you're at the mercy of the winds a little bit. Mm-hmm. They can move them up and down, but you can't... You can't move them in any direction.
Right.
And at some point, you're going to get over the ocean where they're not doing anybody any good. So they want to get over the ocean quickly and get back to land. They're navigating the stratospheric winds 12 miles above the surface of the Earth. That's far higher than planes or anything else. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I don't know. I'm looking at the flight path, though. It looks like they...
It's not
looks
super.
Like they circled Antarctica. I don't know if they really circumnavigated the globe.
It's not equatorial.
It's not equatorial, but maybe they were doing distance. So I don't know.
They went a long way. They started in New Zealand.
That's really cool, but
yeah, they went a long way.
They went a long way.
It's actually starting its second lap right now. IBIS 167.
It went in the third less time than they thought it would go.
Right.
Yeah, that's a pretty
lot.
Cool.
Yeah, they're moving. I bet it. You know, 311,000 miles.
Right.
And the wind ranges from 2 knots to 75 knots, which is very fast. So what they're doing, I mean, all of this is a test to see if this any of this is feasible. I'm guessing that this is good news, that it's doing well. And it avoided the polar vortex, you'll be glad to know. It beat all odds, a record-setting trip around the Earth, or at least around Antarctica. Do you want to do a change log, Gina Trapani?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, before we do, we'll do a little Squarespace ad, and then the change log is coming up next. Gina's back. Are you going to do 2 weeks worth?
No. I'm just going to do this past week.
Nah.
That's it. We're being very zen. We just let go of the things we've missed.
If you weren't there, it doesn't matter.
Embrace the stream of just the new.
Yes, we love the stream. Our show today brought to you by simply the best place to start your next website. Both the best hosting and the best software combine to give you an experience better than anyone else can offer. Squarespace.com. Go there, check it out. In fact, it's very easy to check it out. All you have to do is press that get started button, and you don't need to give them a credit card. Just create an account, an account with name and password, name your site, start designing. You've got 25 beautiful designer templates to choose from. Pick a template, but also look at what people have done with it, because every Squarespace site looks different. And that's the beauty of this. And it's not because you're a master of CSS. You don't need to know anything. You merely need to be able to point and click, and you can customize the heck out. I got to see what this site is. This is based on the template Front Row. It's called This Mess. Oh, it's a band. It's a group. Okay. I love it. This is beautiful. The thing is, you don't have to know any special code. Squarespace gives you all the tools that you need to create a beautiful website. All sites are mobile responsive. That means they look great no matter what size screen you're using. They've got all sites have e-commerce enabled. And the best part of all is it's as little as $8 a month with the annual plan. $8 also gets you e-commerce. So you could sell one product or accept donations, perfect for a charity or a school fundraiser, an all-cash wedding registry. If you want to go to the professional plan, $16 a month, you get unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited blogs, unlimited everything. It's so cool. And full business is $24 a month. That is really affordable. With every annual plan, you get a custom domain name free. The developer platform is great if you do know CSS and you want to do more. They're also innovating in other ways. They've got these great mobile apps on iOS that make it easier for you to manage your blog, to post content, to review metrics. I just love everything Squarespace is doing. I invite you to try it right now, absolutely free for 2 weeks. Visit squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and try it out today. If you decide to buy, you'll get 10% off when you use our offer code TWIG. Just type in TWIG. Here's the logo design tool. See, I think what happens is they've got these great engineers, and they're just doing cool stuff like crazy, just cranking it out. Wonderful stuff. Lots of help on their redesigned help site, by the way, including webinars, 24/7 support. These are the support people. They're all there in Manhattan at the Squarespace headquarters. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIG when you buy to save 10%. And now, ladies and gentlemen, break out the trumpets. It's time for the Google Changelog.
The Google Changelog.
Gina Trapani.
Google Play is getting social. Google has added a new people section to the Play Store app on Android. So to get to it, you go tap on the hamburger icon and you select people from the menu. And there you'll see activity and recommendations from your Google Plus friends within the Play Store, like apps your friends have plus one and reviewed, and even recommendations for others to follow on Google Plus. This follows the new activity feed on the web, which I didn't mention in last week's changelog because I wasn't here, which shows you your reviews and your plus ones in the Play Store. And that you can get to at play.google.com/store, my Play activity. So just kind of a nice way to see recommendations of, you know, what your friends are using the Play Store. Personally, I would love to see, you know, what are all the apps that Leo's running right now and how often. So I kind of feel like this is kind of a step toward that. Remember Google Keep? I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Google Keep?
I still use it. Yeah, I love Google Keep.
Oh, awesome. See, there you guys are both.
And I'm an Evernote guy. But yeah, that's every once in a while. Keep is just a really handy thing.
It's always there, easy to use.
So how do you, so I'm curious, how do you decide, because I use Evernote too, how do you decide when to use Keep and when to use Evernote?
If I'm going
to
keep it, I use Evernote. And if I just want to do a grocery list, I'll do Keep.
Oh, it's like
I'll
for throwaway notes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Google gave the app an upgrade this week, new features and a refreshed design. The new version lets users search for text that's printed in images.
That's
and
nice. It scans the text. Evernote does that too, yeah, but it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really nice. And you can easily copy existing notes, and you can restore deleted notes from the trash can. And the app just got a design refresh to the latest and greatest in their mobile design. There's also a new action bar that changes colors depending on the color of the note. We actually had this great discussion with the Tumblr Android developer last night on All About Android, and he was talking about how this is kind of a new trend in mobile design where you have contextual clues like based on the content. So he was saying in Pocket Casts, you know, the scrubber is the color of the album art, picks a color from the album art and shows it, you know, it colors the scrubber that way. So you have these kind of contextual clues around the content, and Keep is doing the similar thing, that the action bar changes color based on the note. And finally, this isn't really a changelog item because this hasn't actually shipped, but I wanted to mention it. Screenshots that are allegedly a new Gmail user interface floating around. Geek.com published them first, and they show a pretty radical redesign. Some new features, new folders added to those, you know, the social and promotion tags. They're called travel and finance. You get the ability to snooze messages, kind of say, hey, mark this as unread and again in a day or two. Mark your messages as done. And the new design is kind of flat with round avatars. It kind of looks like Google's answer to Mailbox, actually, which Dropbox owns, and which actually just came out for Android. So I don't know if we're ever actually going to see this redesign, but it's pretty different. And I'm interested to see, as someone who makes a to-do list app, what this kind of marking is done and, you know, snoozing ability is in Gmail. I'd like to see that come to fruition.
Very cool.
That's all I got.
It's quick. It's easy. It's the Google changelog. And now it's over. Thank you, Gina.
Sure.
Annie. Did you see the U.S. Air Force? We covered this morning on TNT last night on Tech News Tonight. The U.S. Air Force is, I'm not sure I'm happy about this, testing Google Glass and building apps for battlefield use. I don't want to see a bunch of glass holes marching into battle. Doesn't seem military grade, does it? Really?
Well, it's basically a heads-up display, right? I mean, that's what the pilots use. And
I feel like they could do, I don't know, something
better. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, Glass, take a picture of that guy over there. That's the enemy.
Okay, Glass, show me my closest target.
I could see a heads-up display. This is not a heads-up display. It's, it's a second screen above your eyebrow. The Air Force says it's positive attributes are low power, low footprint, sits totally above the eyes, doesn't block images or hinder vision, so I guess they don't. That's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
That's Second Lieutenant Anthony Easton, a behavioral scientist on the Batman team. That's the name of the team testing the glasses at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. It's the 711th Human Performance Wing.
Let's hope battles only last 6 hours.
Well, that's one issue, and you got to carry an Android phone. Although apparently, I hear that the troops now are very smartphone enabled. They like those smartphones.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get lost in Kandahar, you fire up Google Maps. You say, "Where's the base? Help me home."
Right. Navigate.
Is there Starbucks nearby?
Yeah. Might want to play a little Ingress while you're out there, guys. I'm just suggesting you could just take over some bases.
I love that picture you're looking at too. You got
I got three humans and a mannequin.
The humans, which are, you know, a little nerdly, I would say, and plus the guy in full battle dress, you know, it's like.
Yeah. But that guy is a plastic dummy.
Yeah.
So. The glass is not a silver bullet for many of the Air Force's needs, according to the Air Force. They obtained two pairs of glass through the Glass Explorer program. They tweeted, "If I had glass, I would kill the enemy."
They did not.
No, they didn't.
I was going to say, what?
No, they didn't. The New York City Police Department is evaluating glass, their intelligence and analytics unit. Well, should I frisk that guy over there? Come on. What do you say, Glass? Virgin Atlantic is testing glass. We don't know how. Not for pilots, I pray. The U.S. Navy is testing smart glasses, but not Google smart glasses. They're doing goggles.
I mean, the truth is that glass is interesting and could be potentially useful in any job that involves being out in the field in some capacity, right?
And we don't know. I don't know if they're saying combat. They might be saying, you know, the quartermaster is going to use it to take inventory. We don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Glass Explorer program. This is Google's statement. They first of all wanted to say we are, you know, we're not in any way working with the Air Force here. The Glass Explorer program includes people from all walks of life, including doctors, firefighters, and parents. Anyone can apply to become a Glass Explorer if he or she is a U.S. resident and over the age of 18. In other words, I think Google wants to distance themselves a little bit, saying, you know, we're not doing Defense Department research here. They borrowed him. They bought some.
We're just the tools.
We're just the tools. So I think maybe that story's a little overblown. Of course they're testing them. In fact, if they weren't, it'd be like, well, why not? Google did try to trademark the word glass. USPTO, in uncharacteristically uncooperative, said, wait a minute. Hold on there. The trademark examiner responded to Google with two main objections. One, that the trademark's kind of similar to other existing or pending computer software trademarks containing the word glass. I think, doesn't smart glass, isn't that a Microsoft trademark? Creating a risk of consumer confusion. They also say glass, you know, it's just descriptive. Words that merely describe a product are not trademarkable, absent a showing of acquired distinctiveness. For instance, a company that makes salsa can't say, we trademark spicy sauce.
Right.
That's a description. I mean, this is not, you know, like a slap in the face to Google, but you're going to apply for it. And they're disputing it and they're going back and forth. In fact, they say, by the way, there's no glass in Google Glass, so it isn't descriptive at all.
Yeah, but think of all, I mean, the glass companies out there. Somebody else has tried this probably.
Glass seems very generic.
It's really generic.
Yeah, like, it's too generic.
If you're going to pick a really generic brand name like this, don't expect to get it trademarked.
Right.
Yeah, and they trademark Google Glass.
Oh, so it's not that they don't have Google Glass.
They have Google Glass.
Yeah.
They just couldn't get glass. And I got to say, the patent office is in the right here,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think
not that
so
I'm
too.
A lawyer, but this is just common sense.
Right. I saw this and I thought this was kind of interesting. I'd love to get your take. You were talking about the Play Store. And I saw this article that said the top paid app on the Google Play Store was uncovered as a fake. Not exactly. It's a program called Virus Shield, $3.99. I guess it's a fake because it's an antivirus program. But it doesn't do anything. It merely changes
the shield
to a check mark. You're protected. Chris DeBona, I love it, posted on his Google Plus. We know Chris very well, was former host of Floss Weekly. He's the head of director of open source at Google. He wrote, and I think it's still somewhat true, he wrote this a couple of years ago, no major cell phone has a virus problem in the traditional sense that Windows and some Mac machines have seen. There have been some little things, but they haven't gotten very far because of the user sandboxing models and the nature of the underlying kernels. No Linux desktop has a real virus problem either. He says virus companies are playing on your fears to try to sell you BS protection software for any mobile operating system, including BlackBerry and iOS. They are charlatans, says DeBona. And scammers, if you work for a company selling virus protection for Android, RIM, or iOS, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Doesn't hold back.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I would love that about him.
Yeah. He says what he thinks.
Wow. This is, to be fair to Chris, this is from November 2011.
Right.
But I don't think things have changed significantly.
Not as far as viruses are concerned. Certainly there's vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Right? We're seeing those currently today, but it's not necessarily a virus problem. There are malware issues, certainly, because you can download an app, especially if you don't download it from the Google Play Store or, you know, a reputable Play Store, or if you just find it online and sideload it onto your phone. Yeah, guess what? You're putting yourself at risk, so don't do that.
Sideloading is very dangerous. Don't uncheck that box.
That's right.
Or check it, I guess.
Yeah. But not viruses is my point.
Yeah, I guess that's, and I kept thinking, boy, viruses are going to be an issue on these platforms. They're always connected. They're everything as a bad guy that you would want.
Mm-hmm.
They're always connected. They're, you know, they're always on. Now, I don't see Virus Shield in the top paid Android apps. Maybe, is it still around?
They removed it, I believe.
Yeah, they must have removed it.
Because it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. But if you do a search for virus.
There's probably still, I know ESET offers an antivirus.
Tons of them out there. Yeah. And, you know, and people load them because they think, well, it's a platform. I need a virus scanner. I need a virus protection on there.
And we've recommended Lookout. Mostly what these, at best what these do, they don't do the same thing an antivirus does on a desktop machine. At best, what they do is they go through a database of known malware and see if you've got it.
Right.
And when you download a new app, they check it against that database to make sure it's not known malware.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even by itself, it's fairly useful. Google has built in that capability, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And the first time you download an app on a new Android phone, it says, would you like us to check for malware for in future? And, of mm-hmm. course, I'm sure you all said yes. Is what Google does sufficient? I think it's not much different from what any of these other ones do. Look at all these. Norton, McAfee, ESET. They all offer Lookout.
Yeah.
These are all antivirus programs for Android. And Sophos. And, I mean, these are good companies. They're not scammers.
They're not scammers, but I think they are playing on a fear that we have, right?
I should also point out that almost all of these are free.
Yeah.
McAfee's free. Like, you know, Lookout's free.
For the average user, I wonder if they know the difference between malware. You know, we talk about malware and things like that. They don't know. They just call it a virus.
Know.
It's a virus.
It's the first thing that I'm asked is frequently when somebody gets a smartphone is, should I have an antivirus? Because they know it's a computer. Most of these, like here's Norton, it's free, but for $30 a year, you can get the premium version. Which, you know, offers more protection, it says. Right. And this is often the case, remote lock and erase. But that's built into Android now, too.
If you're running Google Edition, you can just...
Even on my M8, I could download the... you have to download it. But what is it called? The device Android Device Manager?
Device Manager, yeah.
Then it works. I would guess it works on any Android phone, right? I immediately downloaded and installed it. And it looks just like Find My iPhone does on iOS.
Mm-hmm.
It knows where your phones are, pinpoints them. It allows you to ring them, lock them, or erase them.
Yep. Really helpful.
It is kind of alarming, though, that one of the top paid apps that was a virus
did scanner, nothing.
Like, it wasn't caught. You know what I mean? Like that. Yeah. It makes me worried. Yeah, it makes me think, well, there's probably a lot of malicious software out there that's not one of the top paid apps that, you know, malicious, not just not doing anything, which is what this thing did.
Well, I guess what I would say, and certainly it's what I tell everybody, is you probably don't need an antivirus. You should turn on the Google scanner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You should not say I can download from anywhere but the Play Store. And with all that having been said, Google does not vet every app on the Play Store, not like Apple does. But it's a false sense of security, I think, on the iTunes Store if you say, oh, well, see, Apple checks every app. They literally have to look at tens of thousands of apps a day. Stuff gets by all the time.
Sure.
Same thing happens on iOS.
No doubt.
So it's a foolish thing to assume, well, because it's in the store, it's safe on either platform. Take software from known good sources. At least this wasn't malicious. It wasn't like this software did anything bad.
Right, did something bad, right?
Just took your money. I mean,
yeah, it took your money, yeah. That's pretty expensive. I mean, for a $4 app being in the top 10 is a lot.
Yeah, that makes me think a lot of people bought it. Have you heard the rumor about Android Silver? This sounds bogus.
Yeah, these are apparently slides that were leaked, internal slides that were leaked. One of them is dated, you know, over a year ago. So this might be really old information. But Android Silver it's a rumor purportedly. It's a new program that Google basically blesses four or five handsets, which run a pure version of Android or a Google experience with very few customizations. And they're set up in kind of a special area in stores. And employees are trained by Google to sell these devices to customers, to normals, and to help them set up their Google account, transfer their data. It's supposed to be kind of like the premium, easy Android experience. We were talking about this on All About Android last night. And it seems like, if this is true, which it may not be, again, this is kind of dated information and these are leaked slides, it's just a rumor. But if this is true, it seems like this would be Google's way of, you know, exposing the pure Google experience to regular consumers the way that they do in the Nexus line for power users in the Play Store.
Maybe. I was looking at it as more of a, I know it doesn't, it really does reference the consumer, I think, in the slides and things, but I was looking at it more like, okay, this is how they're going to pitch this to business users or businesses. So not it's not just that you get the phone, but you get the phone plus support, which is what a lot of businesses need. They want to be able to have their users. I think one of the things that it had in there was like replacement options. So and maybe they would charge for this, right? So they charge a company an extra $5 a user, kind of like a license thing, and they get all of these additional benefits like support and replacement devices when they're lost. So to me, I looked at this and said, oh, well, this is a business enterprise play, clearly. But it doesn't really say that in the slides. So, and plus, it's a year, you know, a year ago, Android was still suffering. And you can make an argument that they're getting over it now, but they were really suffering from the fragmentation issue because Definitely. Of, you know, all the different platforms out there. And, you know, now, you know, people are fairly standardized, at least on Jelly Bean-ish type or getting close to Jelly Bean standardization out there. So, I mean, this may have been a way for them to try to address the fragmentation problem a year ago. And now it's like, we're kind of over that. You know, we're not too worried about it. So I don't know.
These things change. Boy, I can tell you, I'm reading Fred Vogelstein's book. I've mentioned this a few times before. Stop me if you've heard it. He's a Wired writer who wrote the book Dogfight about Apple and Google. It is great. And what you learn from it is, well, first of all, it's got a lot of behind the scenes stuff I didn't know. As we're covering all these, this whole thing, starting from the release of the iPhone in 2007, Google's response to that. And there's fun stuff like the fact that Andy Rubin, when they first bought Android to create either a Google operating system or a Google phone, nobody really knew. Andy Rubin drove a Ferrari because he'd made some money, and he wasn't allowed to park it in the Google parking lot because at that time Google did not allow fancy cars in their parking lot. Even Larry and Sergey drove a Prius.
Wow.
But you also learned that Google was very ambivalent about the whole thing, that Larry and Sergey wanted to build a phone. Eric didn't. Eric said, no, why should we? We should have our – Google should be everywhere. And, of course, they were doing very well on the iPhone at the time. And so Andy Rubin, so as not to make waves, kept the Android project basically secret. They even had their own cafe built in that area of the Googleplex so that people working on Android wouldn't eat with other people and other people wouldn't eat with them. But then when the time came to release a phone and they went to at the time it was Vic Gundotra running the apps for mobile, and they went to Vic's team and said, okay, hey, we would really like Gmail and Calendar and Maps for our new Android phone. And they said, you're not on the roadmap. We didn't know anything about this. It's 2 years before you get anything. So there is a lot of ambivalence at Google about what to do. And so if you project from this book to now, it wouldn't be at all surprising to me that a year ago Google might have thought this was a good idea, right? But now they don't. And I mean, there was a lot of back and forth. This is a great...
What's the name of that book?
It's called
Dogfight. I'm listening to it on Audible, but you can get it in the bookstore.
Oh, good. I was just looking for it on Audible, so you answered that question.
Yeah, it's on Audible. Fred Vogelstein, he writes it... I know you guys read the excerpt that was published in Wired, which was the story of the Apple engineer going to the iPhone announcement that Steve Jobs was doing and how he was taking a drink every time a demo worked, because it was supposed to be a 90-minute demo of all the features in the iPhone, and this was a very early prototype. It barely worked. They had what they called the golden path that you couldn't do email and then surf. You could surf and then do email. Steve had to walk this very fine line in the demo, do it exactly right, because at any point it would crash. There were only 10, I think, iPhones at the time. They had four of them on the stage. So if one failed, he could immediately go to number two. They programmatically painted five bars on every one of the phones for reception not because they were worried about reception, because AT&T had put a cell site on backstage, but because the radios crashed periodically. And what they didn't want you to be doing is looking at the phone and see the radio go. They didn't want you to see the reboot. So they just, everything was painted 5 bars. That's all in this book. It's really good.
It's called, wow, that sounds amazing.
It is. It is. Now, Chad started and got bored.
It's so funny because part of me thought that it was because all of these stories had been told other books. Because he quoted the Isaacson book and he quoted. And I was like, you know, I should really go get this from the source. I'm tired of him stealing from. Now, hearing you talk about how all of this is fresh, I really want to go back.
And stuff we didn't know. We had no idea, for instance, about the ambivalence within Google about making a phone. And I have that first Google phone, the G1. They actually had to pay. When they created Open Handset Alliance.
It reeked of ambivalence. The G1 reeked of ambivalence.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah. It had a slide-out keyboard. They were so unsure about the idea of typing on the screen. They said, no, we better put a keyboard in this. Mm-hmm. But, I thought it was full of really interesting stuff. And I covered this, Chad. I was here at the time.
It's so interesting that they were ambivalent about it. Wow. Because, you know, looking at it now, of course, hindsight is always 20/20. Right. It's like, this, of course, you know, this is their biggest business, one of their biggest businesses. But wow.
Yeah. Between this book and the Twitter book, I really like any sort of romanticism that I had around the tech industry is completely gone. It's no one knows what to do, it seems like. Everyone's like, this is really difficult. Like, everyone's head is just hitting the ceiling. It's really messy. It's kind of...
And making the iPhone was a very difficult task. Nobody had ever done any of the things that Steve insisted on. A lot of credit to Steve Jobs, because he basically forced this thing to happen.
Yeah, you really see that you need a visionary to truly say, I don't care if you don't want to spend 6 weeks of your life working on something that you think is a detail.
Right.
It's a feature for me.
Forceful visionary.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Anyway, so it could very well be Android Silver was somebody's good idea. It doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It could have been slides made. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Though remember, Microsoft did something called Signature, because Windows... computers were so crapped up, they tried to get manufacturers to do the Windows Signature Edition without any crapware, with better services. A lot of what this Android Silver was, and nobody bit. Nobody, Vizio made some. Nobody made any. It was a flop. Android TV in the news, and of course, Amazon is kind of pushing this along by the release of their Fire TV. I reviewed it yesterday before you buy it. I've been playing with it. It's pretty cool. I like it. It's another set-top box. You know, I don't know how many you need. 800 ways to get Netflix. But I like it. It has one feature that I really like, which is it has a microphone on the remote.
Yeah.
And you don't say, you don't do, okay, Siri, okay, Google. You don't say anything. You just say a couple of words, the title you're looking for. Now, unfortunately, and some have slammed Amazon for this, the search only searches Amazon's own properties. It doesn't search Netflix, but I think that's probably because Netflix doesn't give them a way to search. I don't know if there's an API for... I know there's not an API, public API for searching Netflix data. So I'm not sure I blame Amazon for that one. But it does a very good job. It's understood me every time.
Has
games.
Is the microphone always on, or do you have to click a button? Okay.
Well, that's an interesting point, by the way. You click the button. It's very much like Siri. You click and hold it while you're talking, and then you let go when you say search. Mm-hmm. But according to Ars Technica... Amazon keeps the voice recordings to learn your voice and how you speak to improve the accuracy of results. And then deleting voice recordings may degrade your experience. I don't know where they keep them. They must keep them on their servers.
Yeah.
But there is an entry that will allow you to delete it. I guess it's in the settings, in the voice control options. It works pretty well. They say they keep all users... I'm sorry. That's Apple keeps all users' Siri-related voice data for up to 2 years. Google Now and Connect probably do the same, but there are no deletion options.
It's delete my current voice recordings. It's not store them. So you have to keep going back and saying, okay, yeah, delete. Okay, yeah, delete.
So if you searched for Debbie Does Dallas... and you don't want anybody to know you search for that, you could delete that right there.
So kind of like your history.
It is history.
It's voice history as opposed to like browsing history or something.
That's an interesting question mark. So what do we know about Android TV? Well, it's going to be kind of similar. Like the Amazon Fire TV, it's going to have games. Because you know what Amazon is? The Amazon product is an Android device. It's a quad-core Qualcomm 600 processor. We know that from the iFixit teardown with a dedicated GPU. It's got 2 gigs of RAM, which is a lot for an Android device. That helps with the speed and performance. So I imagine Android TV from Google will be very similar. But what do we know? This is The Verge has leaked screenshots, I guess.
Still unclear how this is different from Google TV.
Well, I don't think there's any pass-through, right? The Google TV was, a lot of that was about cable pass-through.
Which I loved.
Which I hated. I don't use it.
That's okay. But my Xbox One works the same way, and that means I can be watching something and overlay on top of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like it because I'm a cord cutter, right? So I don't, it doesn't do me any good.
You got nothing to pass through.
I've got
through
nothing
it.
To pass through. It's not that I don't like it. It's a cool feature, but I got my TiVo
hooked to the cable, passing through the Xbox One. It all goes into my TV. That means I can, without changing anything, just kind of route all sorts of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But so Android TV won't do that. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I read anyway.
Also, Fire TV is not a pass-through.
And also, I think the interface, even though it's going to be Android, I think the interface is going to be quite different from what I've read on GigaOM and other places. A simplified, you know, what I was kind of hoping was that they would just morph Google TV into like Jelly Bean, right? So like, instead of having a platform that you have to design specifically for, you just design
have
for Jelly
Bean. Have a lean-back experience in Jelly Bean available.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was hoping for, but we'll see. It doesn't look like this is it. They want to keep it really simple and allow people to, you know, like you said, just kind of type something in or speak something in possibly and just have it kind of
That's
come
what's
up.
Interesting. I mean, in this slide from The Verge, if this is accurate, there's a microphone and a Google Now-style search bar. So I would expect that in there.
Yep. The real question is how does this affect Cast? They want to do with
Chromecast.
Well, Chromecast, which is one product, but I was talking to one of the product managers down at Google about this the other day, and it seems like everything's going to be Cast. So Chromecast is one product, right? Yeah. And then Cast though is like the overarching brand. So there'll be Chromecast, TV Cast, something else Cast. And
but this won't be Cast.
Right. It doesn't appear like it's Cast. So I don't understand. It seems to be very competitive with everything that they've got going on right now. So now there's going to be Google TV. There's going to be Chromecast or the Cast family of products and Android TV.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't think Google TV is too long for this world.
No, I don't think so either.
Android TV. But it's true. We were talking about that a little bit of it last night. How does this fit with Chromecast? It seems like they're still setting up for that Chrome versus Android, you know, dichotomy there. But one of the good points that Jason made last night was that, you know, that they announced that a feature at Google I/O last year that gives APIs for developers to search APIs into content, into apps. So that gives something like Android TV the ability to do for, you know, streaming content what it does for web pages, and that you could do a search on Android TV and it could search within apps in one interface, the Netflix and the HBO Go and the whatever, all the different kinds of apps. So that's what I really would like to see. And in that way, it would be different than what, you know, the Fire TV is doing right now, which is just searching, or at least with voice search anyway, just searching the Amazon library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one interesting thing, Koch has made his Allcast work with Amazon's TV, Fire TV, which...
So you can cast to Fire TV from Allcast.
Yeah.
Right, because the cast capabilities are built...
It's Dial.
Wait.
So Amazon Fire TV supports Dial, which is the standard, not the open standard that Google Chromecast sort of uses. Mm-hmm. It's like Dial Plus...
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's why I can do things like from YouTube, I can stream directly to my Vizio CoStar, which is a Google TV device.
Right.
But it's not really cast compliant, so to speak.
So that's confusing.
It is confusing. And I can also stream from Chromecast, from any, I think almost any Chromecast compatible device, I can stream to my LG TV. Which is really interesting.
See, that's dial. I'm sure that's dial or DLNA. DNLA.
Yeah, because they didn't have it back then when I bought my TV.
Yeah, DNLA. Right. Yeah.
Dial and DLNA are different things, but they're related,
they
I gather.
Related.
I think dial is more closely related to what Chromecast does.
Yes.
DLNA is more of like a searchable network thing, right?
It's like AirPlay.
Yeah, exactly.
And what about UPnP? All right, never mind. Forget it. Forget I mentioned it. Bonjour. Privacy chain. Okay, I'm curious about what you guys think of this. Because Quartz got all hot and bothered because of Google's sneaky new privacy change on iOS. I think this is just great and a convenience. If you're logged into Gmail on iOS, then you're also logged into everything else. YouTube, Chrome, Drive, Maps. Just automatically. You sign into one, you sign into them all. I think that's nice. But according to Leo Morani writing in Quartz, it's a sneaky new privacy change that just allows Google to gather more information about you because now you're instantly logged into YouTube. That means you can't really use YouTube anonymously. You can't use Maps anonymously. Google's going to be collecting information on all of those tools. And this comes from their unified privacy policy, which they did a couple of years ago.
Mm. Right. This is the software manifestation of the unified privacy policy.
They don't do it on Android. Or I guess they do. All you have to do is log into Android with your Google account and everything works, right?
Yep. You just say, I want to access. If you have multiple accounts, I want to access with this Google account. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Occasionally, I'll launch a new program and it'll say, which Google account do you want to use, even though I only have one? And I select that account and it goes on. So it's, you do have the first time. But now everything on my Android phone, all the Google services share with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that sync tab when you go into your account settings is getting longer and longer. All the things.
That.
What do you want to sync? Do you want to sync Quorum?
Sync everything.
What? No.
Yes.
Yes, no,
so
maybe.
I do notice when I went to Google.com today that it said privacy and terms were updated. Mm. So I guess... I
and those were always so fun to read.
I guess I have you've got some reading to
really
do.
Read.
I wish they'd put just a little new next to whatever's new.
Yeah.
Here's one. Modified March 31st. I can't read. I can't do it. I'll fall asleep on you.
So if you do like a diff. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's it. Like, there you go. I need a Python script stat. Let's do a diff on these terms of services.
That's a one-liner.
It's like, just give me the plain English version of what changed.
Yeah, just put, that's what they do. It's very nice on the permissions on Android Play. It's very nice. This is new, this is new, this is new.
Yep.
Please tell me what's new.
We'll take your second-born children as well as.
Yeah, right. It could be buried in there.
As well as your right arm.
The below terms, okay, this is what changed. The Google Terms of Service. The below terms are effective April 14th, 2014. To view previous versions, click here. So you could do a diff if you want. Okay. Fire up the diff.
Yeah, there's the comparison. Okay.
Is there on the page?
Yeah.
No.
So yes? when you say under April 14th, there's a link, a comparison, and it's a... Just pretty straightforward diff.
Okay.
With the new stuff in green and the old stuff crossed out in red.
Oh, okay, good. Cool.
There's very few.
All right.
Changes here.
Won't worry about it. Google, I trust you. You're fine.
Okay. This is green. Our automated systems analyze your content, including emails, to provide you personally relevant product features, such as customized search results, tailored advertising, and spam and malware detection.
Yeah.
This analysis occurs as the content is sent, received, and when it is stored. Well, we knew that, right?
Please do more of that, Google. That's good. Yeah. I like it.
I mean, that's Google Now, all right? That's like the definition of Google Now.
Yeah. I don't mind.
I mean, that was almost what was in my... I know you guys probably talked about the birthday of Gmail.
We did.
Yeah. And I went back to my original Gmail email that I got when I signed up.
Oh,
you know?
That's neat. And that's, it said that right there.
It said that. In 2006 or whenever I signed up, it said almost those exact same words. So...
They've never hidden the fact that we are scanning the email looking for advertising links or, you know, looking for what to send you advertising for. They've never done otherwise. All right. Google paid $1.15 billion for Waze, according to the CEO. That's official. But this is the interesting kind of between the lines thing here. It sounds like he didn't want to sell. Noam Bardeen, who's CEO and co-founder of Waze, in a LinkedIn post, confirmed the actual deal. One of Waze's mistakes, he writes, was the valuation of its A round, which significantly diluted the founders. Hey, sometimes that happens. Perhaps we had we held control of the company, as the founders of Facebook, Google, Oracle, or Microsoft had, Waze might still be an independent company today. He was forced to sell by the VCs, it sounds like.
Looks like they should have introduced some of those B and C shares when they started.
When Google came out with free turn-by-turn navigation, stealing our thunder, the response of our Israeli investors was that we should focus on Singapore or Romania instead of the U.S. to avoid the inevitable confrontation. We had a moment of fear and took our eyes off the ball, costing us valuable time. John Malloy, one of the investors, having lived through PayPal, competing with eBay, gave us invaluable experience, something only a unicorn grower would know, and helped steer us.
What?
That's what it says.
Okay.
Just reading. I don't know what it means.
This is a very honest, or appears to
it's
be
a
very
really
honest
post.
After a sale.
Yeah.
You don't hear this kind of thing very often.
Well, normally, aren't you restricted from talking about the sale as part of the...
Yeah, this does seem like information they wouldn't be able to talk about.
Yeah, at least not this soon, right? Usually, it's like at least a year. There's a year moratorium on talking about the details. And
so here's where that unicorn stuff comes from, if you read the whole post. The title of the post is "A Unicorn in Israel? The Shock Displayed by the British Officers at the thought of finding a tiger in Africa" in Monty Python's The Meaning of Life "is similar to the shock displayed by most members of the venture capital community at the Waze $1.1 billion exit. Israel had been written off as only being capable of producing small exits, security or chip companies, not global internet brands. A unicorn in Israel?" So, I don't know. Unicorn growers, I guess, would be a venture capitalist who invested in Israeli startups trying to grow unicorns. The U.S. market is usually considered to be 50 times that of Israel. So if we normalize markets, one would have expected 0.8 unicorns to have been founded in Israeli to the U.S. 39. That's 50x. So our one unicorn exit makes sense. This is a unicorn-rich post.
Some people really like them.
Reminds me of when we first started Twit, some came up to us and said, "I've got some words of advice for you." "Yes, sir." "Bikini-rich content." Okay. Didn't do that. Maybe I'd be a unicorn today.
The article kind of comes away, I mean, it sounds like a little bit like they're complaining because they could have got more money. But it's $1.15 billion.
Well, you got it, though. But he looks at WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Crap." Maybe we could have. You know, even if you've got $1 billion, it seems, maybe that's just a little greedy, but it seems like...
$1 billion isn't what it used to be.
Billion should be enough.
It doesn't go as far as it used to go.
Come
on,
people. $15 billion.
I mean, just look at McDonald's. Look how many billions of users or customers they have. That's...
Right.
Yeah, come on.
Or maybe they just wish they were running an independent company.
I understand, right?
I think so.
That I understand.
I think so.
You know, it's not always about the exit or the biggest exit. It often is, but... Have you guys been watching Silicon Valley on HBO?
Ah, yes. What do you think? I won't say yet.
Not yet. I haven't seen it, so... But it's okay. You can...
I don't think you...
There's no spoilers, right?
Not, so, there's no spoilers in a comedy.
Yeah. I'm going to watch the second episode. It was okay. I thought some of the jokes were pretty good. There were a couple moments that made me crack a smile. A couple of things made me a little uncomfortable. A couple of things I thought were just dumb.
Not too cheesy.
I like Mike Judge, mostly. So I'll watch another one.
I wasn't a Beavis and Butthead fan, but I loved Office Space.
I thought this was
Office Space worthy.
Yes. It definitely had shades of Office Space. I love that movie.
Yeah, me too.
I think that our community, frankly, deserves some poking fun at.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it makes me.
I actually loved it.
It's funny.
I thought it was hysterical.
Oh, good.
You did. You loved it. Oh, okay. Okay. I was expecting.
There were moments. First of all, there's a company that looks just like Google. But it's because, you know, it's not Google because it's headed by a kind of a Mark Benioff
style or Larry Ellison style CEO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could recognize the character. You could. It's, oh, that's a Paul Graham slash Peter Thiel.
It was Peter Thiel, you know, the guy who says. Yeah. So their venture capitalist guy, or angel, really, he's an angel investor guy, is on the spectrum of autism. Right, he's like, he won't look you in the eye. He's kind of. He drives a very narrow car, he's paying $100,000 to anybody who drops out of college to form a company. That's Peter Thiel. And one of the guys says, "Boy, he must really have had a bad experience in college. He must really hate college." In fact, then he comes up to us and he says, "Maybe we should go back to college so we can drop out." I thought it was very funny.
Yeah,
I thought it was very funny.
Moments when the guy's like, "I better put on a better shirt," and then he puts on his old
company shirt.
There's a scene where there's just a crazy, you know, concert going on in the backyard of some, you know, big company. I've been to that
been
awesome. In that scenario. Yeah.
I don't know how accurate it is. It's television. It's probably as close to Silicon Valley as Entourage is to Hollywood, right?
Of course.
But it's close enough. I mean, you feel like there's some humor in it. Look, he clearly comes from a good back. It's not phony, like, you know, made up stuff. It's all real. At that concert, the founder comes up, "Kid Rock," and then he goes, "And I got six words for you." What was it? It was very funny. It was.
"I love Hooli's multi-group, multi-integrated platform."
Yeah. It was hysterical.
Ooh, and they've got their lanyards. It was terrible. Yeah. It was funny. It was funny. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'll check it out then. Beers. It sounds good.
To me, I loved it. And I can't wait to the next one.
And they've got a ton of material. I mean, every day you could take something out of the news and just plug it into the show in a funny way. So,
and the good news is they've put the first episode up for free on YouTube, so you can decide whether you want to torrent the rest of them.
Yeah. Oh, you're not supposed to do that. No. I thought you were serious. Oh, sorry. I mean, I don't do that.
I guess we could play a little bit of it.
It's on YouTube.
There's that bit right there. Here, let's play that part. Can you get my audio? Why can't you?
It's turned up. One second.
Even the wardrobe is so perfect.
You know these guys.
Lots of hoodies.
Let me check.
Are you sending
my sound? I'm not. That's odd that I wouldn't have been. Come on, send it out through the HDMI port. Why won't it? It just won't, Chad.
Time to reboot.
Do I have to reboot?
I mean, just unplug and replug. I think that'll fix it.
Just make it renegotiate.
Handshake.
Should work.
Handshake.
Heartbeats.
Anybody who watches, then out.
Heartbleed.
Work.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
Ghouli Bibs integrated multi-platform functionality. Yeah!
Now, you gotta love that.
I've been there.
You've been there. At that party.
Absolutely.
And the people raise their beer kind of tepidly.
Yeah.
There she goes.
That's funny.
One of my favorite parts is Hooli, which is basically here's the Peter Thiel character.
That benefits only the perpetrators of it. The bloated administrators.
You are a dangerous man. Spewing ignorance.
I don't think so.
It's a TED Talk.
That's hilarious.
It's got the same pretension.
Oh man.
Here's pitches. So this guy has this guy apparently made a little money. He sold his company to Frontier Airlines. And what is it? Aviato. And he's taking pitches from other people who want to move into his incubator, which is basically his house.
Right.
Oops, there's a little profanity there. Okay. Here we go. He's taking pitches.
And that's how I got to where I am. So
I love the beard.
What do you got? Okay, here it is. Bit soup. It's like alphabet soup, but it's ones and zeros.
I would buy it.
Because it's binary. You know, binary is just ones and zeros.
Yeah, I know what binary is. Jesus Christ, I memorized the hexadecimal times tables when I was 14 writing machine code. Okay? Ask me what 9 times F is. It's 75. I do not need you telling me what binary is, just like I don't need you thinking about soup or taking pictures of it. I need you thinking about apps, software, websites. This is Silicon Valley, all right? Not...
He's Googling it.
Paris, Texas. That's where Campbell's soup
okay,
is.
I'm sold. I'm sold.
Don't you love
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it. I might be the only one laughing in the room. The rest of the family's
it's
watching.
It's kind of programmer humor. That's and you know he's at the ice cream machine getting his yogurt in the company cafeteria, and they go, "Oh, here come the programmers," and so and the programmers haze him mercilessly. It's very
That's
funny. It's Office Space though. It's the same idea, which is the downtrodden programmers,
right?
You know,
yep.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I like it.
I like it. Just me, maybe. I don't. I think. Did we talk to? I think I talked to Jeff yesterday. I think he didn't. He didn't hate it, but he didn't love it. But remember, he's a TV critic. It's his job.
Yeah. And he liked Big Bang Theory, so you know.
He did.
Yeah. Remember, we talked about Big Bang Theory.
and where did you stand on that? Okay. How about you? Do you like
Big Bang Theory? I don't watch it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I,
this is good because there's no laugh track. You have to decide whether a joke's funny on your own.
I like that.
Agreed.
I really like that.
Yep.
Agreed. Yeah. Emotional manipulation, and it's always suspect.
It's like Upworthy, and you won't believe how funny
you won't
this is.
Believe what happens next?
Yeah. I'll tell you what happens next in that for LegalZoom, and then, ladies and gentlemen, the tool, the tip, and the number of the week. But first, a word from LegalZoom. LegalZoom is not a law firm. No, no, no. Much better. They provide you with self-help services at your specific direction so you can get the legal work you need done at a very low cost, and they can give you legal help through independent attorneys and self-help services. Not a law firm, much, much better and much, much more affordable. I mean, for instance, if you're starting up a business, you can get an LLC for $99 plus filing fees. Now, your white shoe attorney with the 8 different names on the front door is not going to give you a fee like that. That's how I did the LLC for Twit. It's the work. It's the papers we're still using. You can do a Chapter S or Chapter C Corp, too. Got to get that trademark. Chad, have you finished trademarking OMG, Chad? No, you haven't. It's $169, Chad. Trademark it.
It's like I already spent the money. Like I just need to go through the
I know. You go through the step-by-step thing and all of that.
It's the trademark office. They're like, we need a specimen.
You need a specimen. Send them a specimen.
Sorry. It's not LegalZoom. It's a trademark.
Right? No, but you got to give them an example so that they can file it. That's what they put on file.
Yeah, exactly.
So I gave them the Twit name, and then I gave them the Twit logo, and it's just a drawing. It doesn't have to be super fancy, but that's what that's on file, so somebody can look at that and say, oh, yeah, we don't want to infringe.
Right.
It's worth it. Let's face it. The legal system is complicated. It's expensive. There are better things you can do with your time and money, but LegalZoom is there for you, making it so much easier and so much more affordable. Trademark, will, living trust, all the personal stuff, too. You get the personal attention you need, and they'll help you take care of all the details. LegalZoom, they've been helping families and small business owners for 14 years, including me, A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. They're great people, and it is a great service that is really empowering people, and I'm all for that. LegalZoom.com, use the offer code TWIG to save on your legal needs and get access to the network of Legal Plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom.com, offer code TWIG, you get $10 off at checkout, and we get a little thank you from LegalZoom. They say, thank you. That guy, Joey, came over, and he did an LLC. Thanks, TWIG. LegalZoom.com, use the offer code TWIG. Gina Trapani, why don't we start things off with you, a tip of the week.
All right, cool. A cute little new thing in Google's interface that new to me anyway, that Google Operating System pointed out. Google's app launcher on the web, that little box, you know, the squares in the box, it looks a lot like Android's app launcher, actually, but it's in the upper right-hand corner. You can now customize that. You can move around the icons that you want to, you know, to put the apps that you use the most up top, and you can relocate apps maybe that you don't use into a different page. And you can add new shortcuts, like to Google Keep, for example, if you're a big Keep user. So you can just kind of customize that little launcher, make it a little more useful. I gotta be honest, I don't use the launcher very
much.
I generally just navigate to the app that I want. I'm just used to doing the Control L and typing into my browser address bar, but that button is everywhere. It's in every app. So if you just want to quickly navigate to another Google app, you can do that. And now you can sort of arrange those icons very much like you would do on your Android home screen. So you're seeing a little bit of the web Android unification going on there.
Now, is this the extension, the Chrome extension?
No, this is like if you go to google.com or if you go to Gmail, there's a little grid of boxes on the top right. That's like their web app launcher. You click on that. It's actually on the web page. It's not a Chrome extension at all.
It's just a little grid.
Because I've been using a Chrome extension to do just this for the past couple months, and I use it all the time.
No, it's this little grid right here.
Yeah, I guess they can't see mine. But when I go to mine, I have that customize at the or configure at the bottom. So I downloaded a Chrome extension to do exactly this.
You don't have to anymore.
But I don't have to anymore.
See,
that's
it says
great.
New. Drag and drop.
Oh, yeah.
To arrange your apps. Right there, and I can just...
Yeah.
That makes it much more useful.
Yes, because, see, I have a second page.
Right, right.
And I
right.
would like so to get photos up here, for instance.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And get Google News down here, things like that.
And I've put Keep up there. We talked about Keep earlier. I put Keep up in there because I use that a lot. So now wherever I'm at, I can just click the little grid and choose Keep. So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, actually, photos I go to all the time, and I always forget what the URL is, and I wind up clicking through Google Plus. So this will be way better
for that. Yeah. It's great. I wish it's on. It was not. It doesn't seem to be on Google Drive, is it?
They have Drive.
Oh yeah, there it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Only on the top page. Once you're in a document, it goes away. Okay. Because I use this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's all these pages of stuff. I can move the stuff down that I don't want.
Cool.
Good tip.
Yeah. Thanks.
Aaron, you don't have to do a number. What would you like to add to the pot?
So I've got a project. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Your project?
I love your projects.
Oh, good, good. So this is something really cool that I saw. Actually, Make posted this. Folks over at Make Magazine posted this. There's been a project for a long time called Paperduino, which is basically taking a piece of paper, instead of using a breadboard, you make your own Arduino-compatible board, but using paper. Well, now they've gone one step further.
Is there electronics in it?
There is electronics in it. Yep, absolutely. So I don't know if you've got
I see. So instead of the breadboard, you use a piece of paper.
Use a piece of paper. And so now they've gone one step further, and they've created Paperduino Tiny, which is even smaller. So my next project is taking this. Right now this is about 4 inches by 5 inches of paper.
Stiff paper?
You could use stiff paper. It's up to you what kind of paper
you use.
Yeah, okay. You just print
and
this
And you
off.
Just print it onto it.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this and rejigger it to make it into business card size. That's going to be my new business card.
Hand out a business card with a little circuit. What are you going to put on it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I think I'm going to put like a speaker and make some LEDs blink, and that way you can push a button and it'll kind of give
you
my...
But you actually put the components on it?
Yeah, you put the components right on it. Yep. Now, that'll be for – what I can do is I can print out small ones, like the ones that I give out to, you know, people that I just meet on the street or whatever. But then I can print – I can actually do the components on the ones that I want to give to those A-class people that I really want to remember my
name. People
on
the street happen to have resistors and diodes in their pockets.
Absolutely.
They can do it themselves.
And the great thing is on the back of this, you can put the instructions on where to download all this stuff. It's about $4 awesome. Worth of components.
Now, how do you solder it? Doesn't it set the paper on fire?
Very carefully.
Good question.
Very carefully. Yeah. No, it
good,
doesn't
good
if you're... If
I burned up my Paperduino!
Yeah, it doesn't. If you look on the back of it, actually, there's
right,
another
let's
image.
See here. Let's go back.
It'll show you the back of the... There was
it
one.
It shows you where
click
the
on,
wire is no, going to go.
One. Click on the first one again.
Okay. Can I flip the first one over?
I think so. I thought there was a back, a picture of the back.
I don't think they want to show you the back.
Let's see. There's a...
there it is. Is that...
No, that's not it. I thought there was a picture.
Is there, because
I don't have it on. Here's what it looks like. You can see, basically what they did was they connected everything with wires, kind of like you would do with a standard
really
breadboard.
Solder,
you're still using
you
solder.
Okay.
But you see, if you look real closely on mine, you can see where they burnt the paper.
It's like a wire wrap, but you just have to be very careful.
You just have to be very careful. Set your temperature on your solder gun appropriately so you don't, you know, have a problem, but... I thought that was really, really cool. The fact that, you know, $4 of components and a piece of paper, you have yourself an Arduino-compatible device that you
it's
can use.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So this is basically kind of like a breadboard or a project board.
Yep.
And, I could see you can solder it. If you just, you know what, you don't touch the tip of the soldering iron to the paper.
Right.
You just melt the solder.
Right. Because the solder's going to cool very, very quickly.
Yeah, it's not going to burn. The solder itself probably won't burn the paper.
So, oh, good. I'm glad you found those images. Yeah. So. Yep, so that's it. And I thought that was so cool. So So this is going to be my next project. And I think for anybody that wants to do a little soldering, learn a little soldering.
I might do this.
I'm thinking we could probably use this in a makerspace for a project for kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Do they have, what kinds of boards do they have?
What
kind of projects? Are they all?
Well, this is basically.
Oh, it's an Arduino. It doesn't do anything particular.
Right. So you program it the same way you would an Arduino. So if I was doing this for kids, I'd probably do it with blinky lights. And I would say, okay, now we're going to make, you know, the green light blink, and now we're going to make the red light blink, and here's how you change your sketch and upload that into the Arduino.
You know what I'm going to do? This would be really fun.
Yeah.
To do. Where do you get your stuff? Do you get it at Adafruit, or where do you like getting your Spark Fun?
So if I'm getting, it depends, right? So if like I'm getting a bunch of resistors, I'd probably just get them off of eBay from China and just have them ship a ton of them over for like $5 or something.
You get like an assortment?
Oh, yeah, you like can get every kind of resistor assortments. Absolutely. That's the way to go, actually, because you never know what you're going to need, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
And then you have to learn the ring code. Do you know it by heart? Codes.
I looked at, I don't know them by heart. No, oh, my
you're
goodness.
Looking, so you have to search through there's red, great, green.
That could
red.
Have been, there's actually a couple of Android apps for looking up resistor codes. It's pretty cool. Good thing to have on your Android phone.
I like it.
If you're a maker. So, yeah. Take that, and if you ever see me, you know, if the next time you see me in person, ask me if I've got a card for you. Maybe I'll have a fully baked.
And
Arduino
how much is it, if you put an Arduino on it, how much is the total cost of it?
Well, this is Arduino compatible. So, I mean, this whole thing is $4 worth of components.
That's all?
That's it.
Per card?
Yeah. And the paper. And the printer ink. The printer ink probably costs almost
five pieces. Oh, here. I'm buying this right now somehow.
Oh, no. You don't want to. I think you're buying a paper Arduino.
Tiny card, double-side printed hard paper, $3 USD for five pieces. But that doesn't include components. Then you have to buy the components.
You have to buy the components, yeah.
And you use a thumbtack, a push pin.
Right.
To make the holes.
Exactly.
Do you have to have, I have sausage fingers. Do you have to have really fine, grilly fingers? No, you have sausage fingers.
I have pretty big fingers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're about the same size as yours.
I don't have to have look like Adrian Brody in The Pianist.
Okay. No, what you do need to get is a pair of helping hands. You know, those little, has a little magnifying glass and a little. Yeah. Alligator clips
those
to hold your components.
Yeah.
Definitely need that. Yeah. And for people my age, you do need the magnifying glass.
Oh, yeah.
That's essential at this point.
So let me quickly look at my Gmail, because this was a suggestion from somebody. I was talking last week about how the only negative on using the M8 was that I didn't have the Moto X assist feature. And he said, you know what? There is something that does everything the assist does on any Android phone, and he's right, and I downloaded it. It's called Agent, and it allows you to set up any Android phone, use the accelerometers to do. Have you talked about this at all about Android or somewhere else?
I've heard about this. I don't remember exactly when we did talk about this.
Yeah, I'm looking for the email so I can give the guy credit. But this was really a nice tip, and I can't find your email. I'm sorry, sir. So. This is Agent. I've launched it, and I have five sections: battery, sleep, parking, meeting, and drive. Now, some of this stuff actually is better than the Moto X, but let's look at the drive. So it knows if I have a Bluetooth connection. It can also use, it's in beta, but it can also use motion detection to see whether I'm driving. And then once I'm driving, it can do a variety of things. Silence the phone, or, and this is what I have it do, read text messages out loud. I can respond with speech only. And then it will prompt me for a voice response, transcribe it, and send it as a text message reply. That is what Motorola Assist does in the Moto X. That's awesome. If I'm sleeping, and you can have sleeping activation times, I say, who can wake me? But I can also say, send a text that says, hey, I'm asleep. But if this is urgent, text me the word urgent. And then my phone will actually play an alarm clock sound.
Wow.
Wake me up. And then the phone call will go through. So I can say to, then you can control whether who gets this message. Most people will get nothing. But if, you know, my kids call me in the middle of the night, they'll get a text message saying, hey, I'm sleeping. If you text urgent, my phone will ring loudly and wake me up. Hmm. Or whatever you want. You can change that. So. Right now we're in a meeting, so it's on Do Not Disturb, and I can say which calendars, this is actually better than Moto Assist, which calendars it looks for meetings with. If the meeting says busy, it will not ring my phone, or it will send out a text message saying I'm busy. This is one the Moto Assist does not do. it will automatically record parking spots without me pressing a button because it knows I've stopped moving at that speed. I must have parked. So I will always know where I've parked without doing anything. It's a really nice
little
program.
What an awesome app. What's it called? I'm downloading it right now.
Agent.
Yeah.
That's if you need to search, it's Agent, Do Not Disturb, and More.
Ah, thank you. And how much is it, Chad?
It's free.
Ooh.
Even better. I just installed
it. My first question was, does Agent use up a lot of battery life? And he said, no, it doesn't. You know, that was one of the things that I thought made the Moto X so special is it had that special secondary low-power processor to watch for things like that without actually waking up the phone. But he's right. I haven't noticed a huge drop. There are some GPS functions that conceivably would leave the GPS on longer than it would normally be on. That might affect your battery life, but I haven't noticed it at all. And boy, I really, that was one of the things really that was holding me back from switching from the Moto X to the HTC One. I love Moto Assist, so this does that and more, and it works fine on the M8. Yes, Faraday Cage in our chat room is asking me, does it work?
Wow,
yeah,
awesome,
yeah,
that's great. It's like a because I used to use Tasker for a lot of those things.
Yeah, right? But Tasker, you have to do manually, kind of. Yeah, you have to set it all up, and it's complicated. This is basically Tasker with preset things.
Yeah.
The five things you'd most likely want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's great.
And now, if anybody wants to wake me up, you know how.
Urgent. Lisa will love that.
She is on the list. But
what if you texted you and say, don't worry about this, Leo. It's not urgent.
Then I will wake up.
Still, you're going to wake up.
Pissed.
Yeah.
I'll be pissed.
That's be like, text me Shazam.
Yeah, that's be something really specific.
I should maybe change that word, huh? Now, it's called Agent, but look for Agent Do Not Disturb in the Play Store if you want to search and find. Hey, that's it for this week in Google for this week. Gina Trapani, it's so great to have you back. ThinkUp.com now open to the public.
Yes, indeed.
If you
want to
get,
it was great to be back.
Insights. Did you get any signups from last week when we talked about it?
We did. Signups been going really, really well.
Good.
We obviously had a big spike when we first opened, and then it kind of leveled out a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I really appreciate all the support from the Twit Network. Everyone has been so great. You've all been, you and Jason and Ron, were all early backers, and I really appreciate it. It looks like we might actually have a shot at a business model.
Who
would have thought? We had a small shot.
Cool. Here's my ThinkUp. So it takes my Facebook and Twitter and gives me analysis, and then it does it in a nice personal way. For instance, three interesting people who followed me, and then I have this button that says, actually, please hide them. I don't want to see them. Here's the deal with Leo Laporte's status updates. Did you and Anil both write the copy on this? Or
we did. We collaborated on it. We tried to make it it's analytics for humans, right? So it's supposed to be kind of conversational and cool, not robotic, not charts for the sake of charts, but just kind of little stories that come out of those charts. So we're trying to tell those stories. It's not easy because everyone uses these networks different ways, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
See, this is a good feeling. 460,519 more people saw Miguel de Icaza's tweet. Thanks to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're using your network really well.
Yeah.
You're find the right people.
Yeah.
Nice job,
you
Leo.
Can thank me later, Miguel. here's what you tweeted, what I favorited on the last year. My most popular tweet 2 years ago. Oh, wow.
Oh, game on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Last episode. Wow, it's been 2 years. Do social tech and tech sound like good descriptions? Donna Dubinsky, the founder of Palm, can thank me for 502,000 more people seeing her tweet. There you go. See, I retweet the best people.
You do.
Wow.
You
Chelsea Corca followed me. Don't know who that is. But this is fun. So that's thinkup.com if you want to sign up for that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I just like it.
Well,
it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, we want to get to a place where it sort of helps you decide, what to do different or better. But
if you're trying to use social media for a purpose, this would be useful.
Yeah, like if you're a business, right?
Right.
I mean, this is kind of crucial data.
Very valuable stuff.
Yeah. I mean, really anybody with an audience can make a difference, I think, and get messages out. And I think our hope is that these kinds of insights help. So thank you for checking it out, Leo.
ThinkUp.com. Thank you, Gina.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to try to get some more better lighting in here, some stuff on the walls. It's going to be awesome. Going to be good.
And tell that person next door to stop torrenting Game of Thrones or whatever was going on earlier.
Yeah.
It's a co-working space. She can't be held responsible.
Right, right.
We thank Aaron Newcomb for being here always. He brought donuts this morning instead of bagels by popular demand.
Yeah. Tony sought me out to thank me. He's like looking for me. I'm like, what did I do? And he's like, thank you for the donuts.
Bring so like, sure. donuts.
Anytime.
Aaron is at NetApp.
NetApp.
What does that little company do?
Storage systems mostly. So we do a lot of stuff really, but we're known for our enterprise class storage systems that we a lot of integration with business apps like Oracle and SAP and stuff like that. Awesome. So it's Storage Plus.
Storage Plus.
Plus a bunch more. I just came up with that, so I'll take my paycheck now. Thank you. No, it's a great company. In fact, it's one of the top companies to work for just about everywhere, all of our offices.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they always have.
Do you work at home or do you go into an office?
A little of both.
Yeah.
A little of both. It's a trek. It's 2 hours.
Yeah, I used to commute
2.5 hours down to Sunnyvale.
No fun. Yep, that's exactly where I went.
And so that makes it tough, but they're very flexible, very good. They treat their employees very well. So like, yeah, work from home when you want to and then come in when you need to.
That's why you're an Audible subscriber.
Yep, absolutely.
That's how I first found Audibles when I was commuting to Cupertino.
Oh, it's great for commutes. Great for commutes. Yep. Yep. And so is Twit. Twit's great for commutes too.
Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah.
We do this show, in fact. Twit would be a good one. Every Wednesday afternoon, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC on twit.tv. If you can watch live, we like it if you do. But it's not a requirement by any means. That's why we make look, we just want you to watch it. We don't care how. On demand, you don't have to torrent it. I don't think you can. Just go get it. It's free at twit.tv/twig or wherever finer podcasts or netcasts are stored. Audio and video available. What else should I say? Thank you, Chad Johnson, our producer, for doing such a great job.
No problem.
And thank you for being here.
Yeah. Thanks to our audience.
Time. Yeah, and our studio audience. Hi. Way far away.
How's it going over there?
They didn't want to sit too close. Hi.